How are you? Welcome to the Drive Podcast. My name is Ted Henley. Summer vacation is here for Calgary kids. I can hear them already screaming as they exit the hallways, you know? On the podcast today, ideas for you on how to get your kids outdoors and off their screens this summer. Also today, how you can prevent thieves from hacking into your car. And off the top of the podcast, what one prominent Canadian YouTuber says about Bill C-11, Canada's proposed online streaming act. We're talking about Bill C-11, Canada's online streaming bill that's now before the Senate. If it passes in the Senate as is, Bill C-11 would update the Broadcasting Act and bring streaming platforms like Netflix and Amazon Prime within the regulatory regime. It would also apply to platforms, though, like YouTube and Spotify, making them promote Canadian artists by law. There are people for and against what's included in this bill. J.J. McCullough is one of the more vocal people against Bill C-11 in its current form. J.J. is a Canadian YouTuber, commentator, also a writer for The Washington Post. J.J., thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
So Bill C-11, J.J., what does Bill C-11 mean to you?
Well, so Bill C-11 is really probably best understood as the government just giving new powers to the CRTC over the internet. So we're sort of familiar with the CRTC as the agency of the federal government that regulates what you can and cannot broadcast on the radio and on television, and sort of in what proportion programming has to be aired and all of this kind of stuff, you know, the Canadian content quotas and all of that. So basically what's happening now is that in the 1990s, the Chrétien government, I think rather, you know, intelligently granted an exemption to CRTC jurisdiction from the internet, because they sort of said that an unregulated internet would probably be in the better interests of the Canadian content creators, which I think it was. But now the Trudeau government is basically sort of revisiting that decision and is pushing Bill C-11 because they explicitly want the CRTC to have power over the internet, and specifically over internet broadcasters like YouTube and Netflix and Disney Plus, and make them play by the same rules that Canadian television channels and broadcasters and radio stations have to play by.
Yeah. It's kind of like conventional media, which obviously my show is part of that. And then you have new media on the other side. Is there a meeting in the middle here, do you think, regarding the CanCon content or, contributions to a Canadian Creators Fund, you know, that type of thing? Is there a meeting in the middle?
Well, I mean, like, if I was sort of in charge of this, like, my compromise would be to just get rid of regulation for everyone, right? So, like, I've heard enough of the testimony of the old media companies, and I'm not unsympathetic to some of their complaints, right? So when you listen to some of, like, the big media corporations in this country, when they say why they're in favor of giving these new powers to the CRTC to regulate the internet, they say, look, we have to jump through all of these hoops, you know, we have to air these unpopular Canadian television shows that nobody wants to watch and are big money losers for us. You know, we have to pay into this Canadian Creator Fund to subsidize the creation of, you know, whatever the Heritage Department feels like subsidizing, and so on and so forth. And then they look at YouTube and the other streaming services, and they say, these guys don't have to play by those same rules. This isn't fair. And I agree, it isn't fair, I guess, on some level. But my instinct would be to say, okay, well, then maybe we've realized that a lot of these CRTC rules have kind of outlived their usefulness, and we should maybe just kind of lessen the regulatory burden on all media across the country, regardless of platform. But that's not what the Trudeau government is doing. They're kind of going in the opposite direction, and they're, I think, rather awkwardly trying to now extend these 30-year-old media regulations that were created in the context of traditional broadcast media, and they're trying to extend them to platforms like YouTube, where I make a living making videos, and trying to like awkwardly pretend that YouTube is going to be able to, play by the same rules of Canadian content quotas and all of this. And I think it's just going to be a big mess, and it's going to be a big stress, and it's causing a lot of professional content creators like the many, many Canadians who make a living on YouTube a great deal of anxiety, because they're worried that this is really going to affect their bottom line and their livelihood once sort of new regulations come into force. And it's no longer going to be as clear or as obvious how you can make successful revenue-generating content.
I'm chatting with J.J. McCullough this afternoon on The Drive. J.J. is a Canadian YouTuber, a commentator, also a writer for The Washington Post occasionally. And J.J., I guess it begs the question as to maybe all of the rules that all broadcasters follow should be just blown up and restarted, considering the influence of the internet. I totally get all that. But there's kind of a third silent person at the table here, don't you think? I mean, so you have obviously the conventional broadcasters have to answer to the CRTC. I mean, that's how they get their broadcast licenses, be it radio or TV. You have obviously yourself who, answer to the content that you decide to create. But there's also YouTube, Netflix, Amazon Prime or Amazon Video, you know, whoever the platform happens to be, because they have their own rules as well, right? So how does that all fit into things here?
Well, yeah, so it's a good point. So it's like when I go to upload a video on YouTube, and the degree to which that video will be successful or a flop is in part determined by sort of YouTube's own internal content regime, right? So this is, you know, in sort of YouTube parlance, they refer to it as like the algorithm, right? Like YouTube has some sort of under the hood algorithmic system that determines whether videos are promoted, if they're easy to find, if they're suppressed, you know, and then thus if the videos get a certain number of views and thus if they're profitable for the people that made them. And that's difficult and that's stressful. And I think that the problem, though, is the idea that mastering that system is already a bit of a challenge. I mean, it can be overstated, but, you know, it is a challenge. And then the idea that now we're going to have to deal with another layer of regulation from the CRTC that is in some ways going to, like, intersect or interplay or overlap or contradict or whatever with YouTube's own algorithmic system for determining what kind of content gets promoted or demoted, right? So, you know, I talk to people about this, and, like, there's a lot of people that are already kind of like suspicious of, big tech companies, you know, quote unquote, agendas in terms of what kind of content that they want to see popular or not. And that's fine. That's a fine debate to have. I mean, they're private companies, so they do have some degree of right to sort of determine their own, you know, content platform algorithms. But the problem is just that now to have government involved in that process as well, to have government sort of instituting some sort of rules regarding what kinds of videos they think that Canadians should be watching more of in the pursuit of some sort of patriotic greater good, I think strikes a lot of people as something very inappropriate in a free society.
Yeah. So where do we go from here, JJ?
the bill has passed the House of Commons.
Yeah.
So it is now in the Senate's jurisdiction. And I mean, you know, I'm clear-eyed about how the parliamentary process works. We do know that by the time things get to the Senate, they do become a bit of a fait accompli. You know, as much as the Senate professes itself to be this like great independent, sober second thought thing, we do know that it's broadly a rubber stamp for the government that appoints most of the senators. But on the other hand, I do think that this bill has been extremely controversial. And I do think that there is a lot of pressure on the Senate and on the government itself, on sort of the Liberal government, to perhaps, you know, be receptive to that public pressure at some point. So I do think, like, if the public pressure continues to be, as kind of red hot as it's been in the last couple of weeks, I think at the very least there would be pressure to maybe water down the legislation a bit at the Senate level. You know, the Senate doesn't, you know, reject bills, but it does propose amendments. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a sense that this bill is being rushed through. And I do think that the Senate's process, you know, working with the government, working with the Liberal government, might have an opportunity to maybe introduce some amendments that could perhaps water it down a bit. It will never be a bill that will be to my satisfaction, but it might be a bill that, is at least a little bit more palatable if maybe there are greater content protections for, you know, the quote-unquote user-generated content of the sort that professional YouTubers like I make, and, you know, perhaps shifting the burden more to, I think, the kind of like the tax kind of side of things, right? Like, I do think a lot of these corporations are much more willing to just pay the fine, basically. Like, just pay into the Canadian media content subsidy slush fund, whatever, right, rather than have to deal with obligations to promote or encourage certain kinds of content, which their audiences, just their user base, just does not want that.
JJ, I appreciate your insights this afternoon into this issue. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's JJ McCullough, Canadian YouTuber, commentator, and writer for The Washington Post, talking about Bill C-11, the online streaming bill that's now before the Canadian Senate. Today is the second, well, tomorrow's the last day of school for all Calgary kids, be it the public school board, the Catholic school district. Tomorrow's the final day of classes, period. So with that in mind, we have ideas for you today on how to get your kids or grandkids away from screens this summer. With that in mind, I'd like to welcome Kathleen Gursky to the drive this afternoon. Kathleen is the vice chair of the Alberta Camping Association, as in Alberta Summer Camping Association. Kathleen, thank you so much for being here.
Ted, thanks so much for having me. I always love talking about getting teens outdoors in the summer.
Yeah, outdoors. That's a great idea because, I mean, as you know and as I know and as likely everyone listening knows, that smartphones, they do attract the attention of teenagers, don't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, we can't blame teens for things on their smartphones being interesting and really, you know, rewarding that dopamine in their brain by playing games or being on TikTok or Instagram and things like that. You know, the phones are wired for kids to be engaged with them.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, so let's focus on getting teens, you know, a dopamine fix in nature. And that brings up the whole idea of a camp. So tell me, Kathleen, why are camps so good for teens?
Camps are a fantastic place for teens for so many reasons. One of the ones that has really struck a chord with me, especially over the last 2 years for the teens that we serve at our camp, is they have been so much more isolated socially from their peers at school and their friends maybe on sports teams or in cadets. And they really haven't had that time to be face-to-face with each other or even try new things. There's really limited opportunities through COVID for our teens to try a new activity because those activities maybe weren't running. And so camp is kind of this amazing opportunity for these teens to be together, be outside, be away from the screen, and be trying new things that we know is going to give them a great sense of self.
Yeah. And before we get into some camp suggestions for everyone listening this afternoon, so how do you figure out which camp is right for your child?
The best thing to do, in my opinion, is to ask your child what they are interested in, because there's camps across the province to serve absolutely every interest. There's camps that have, you know, wakeboarding and water skiing programs. There's camps that have horse programs. There's camps that have backcountry tripping programs. There's day camps in the city that have things, you know, like 3D printing that happen at them. And so for anything that your child is interested in, there's a camp. The greatest thing in my mind is if you go to the Alberta Camping Association website, so albertacamping.com, you can actually filter camps based on the different activities that they offer to see what aligns best with your kiddo's interests or things that they want to try out.
Oh, very cool. Okay. So let's go through a few suggestions then. If we want to get to nature, if we want, you know, our camper to get out in, you know, the great outdoors and kind of get kind of immersed in nature, what are some camp suggestions for that?
I would say Camp Chief Hector in the Calgary area is fantastic. They are running, you know, multiple multi-day outdoor expedition trips. Frontier Lodge, Camp Vilaqua, these are all great camps that are accredited by the ACA that are going to be safe, wonderful opportunities for kids to be really out in nature in the backcountry.
Okay. And are there any up in the Edmonton area, like Jasper area, that you would recommend?
Oh, yeah. Camp Warwa is one of my absolute favorite camps to visit, or to even speak to the folks who run, because they're so fantastic. And they also have a great outdoor backcountry component as well, which we absolutely love about them.
Yeah. Okay. What about if you know, my child, my camper to be, is interested in, say, I don't know, horses. Are there any specific horse camps that you would recommend?
Oh, for sure. So Pioneer Ranch, Pioneer Lodge, both of those are fabulous horse camps, as well as Camp Evergreen, Teen Time outside of the Edmonton area, and Circle Square Ranch is always fabulous. So those are always really great horse programs to check out.
I'm chatting with Kathleen Gursky this afternoon on The Drive. Kathleen's the vice chair of the Alberta Camping Association. We're talking about getting your teen or your young camper out into the great outdoors and also getting into activities. So we've talked about horse camps. We've talked about, you know, getting out of the outdoors and kind of immersed in that type of experience. What about if my little camper is into tech? Can you recommend any camps if my camper wants to do something tech related?
Yeah, there's some tech camps that are based out of most metropolitan areas. Places like Bricks for Kids is a great one. There's also some through a lot of the universities as well as colleges that'll have more tech-developed programs that are fantastic to check out.
Okay, and what if my child wants to sail or something like that on water?
Absolutely. Camp Bonaventure is a fantastic place to sail, and Camp Kasota West has a very well-developed sailing program as well.
Okay. And you wanted to highlight something about the camp that you help run, Kathleen, and highlight something about the smartphone usage.
Yeah. So I'm so lucky to be the manager of Camp Amicus, based out of Calgary, and we serve kids with learning disabilities, ADHD, and related diagnoses. And not only is our camp cell phone and screen-free for the campers, with the exception of when we're doing things like 3D printing, but actually all of my staff are tech-free as well. So my staff sign in their cell phones every single day. If they're working at day camp, they don't see that cell phone from 8 in the morning till 5 o'clock at night. And if they're at overnight camp and they're working, you know, all day with these kiddos, they'll only have their cell phone with them for a maximum of 2 hours a day.
Wow. How was that received? Yeah. How was that received?
You know what? A couple of years ago when we did it, there was a little bit of pushback from staff. And now I'd say the first, honestly, 60 minutes of taking their phones, putting them in the padded envelopes and locking them in a lockbox for security, I see all of that go, oh gosh, oh gosh. I remember reading the policy. I remember being sent it, but oh gosh. And within, you know, 48 hours, they're like, I don't even want my phone on break. I'd actually rather spend time with the folks who I work with. And my staff are, you know, 18 to 30 years old. So a lot of them could have been campers in the last 2-3 years. And they relish in the fact of not having their cell phone. And I even have staff who come back to me 8-10 months after they've stopped working for me. And I've been calling them and texting them, trying to get a hold of them. Like, sorry, I haven't had my phone on me for 3 days because I don't have that relationship with it anymore. And honestly, I'm like, that's the best news I could possibly have. Like, yes, maybe it's a little harder to get a hold of them in the off season, but the fact that they are doing things with folks outside, gosh, what a reward.
Yeah, being in the moment, like the moment that you're physically at, right? As opposed to being in, you know, the phone somewhere else, right? It's quite an accomplishment for sure.
It is. And yeah, the staff love it. And frankly, I love it too, because when those messages come in, I have the emergency camp phone. Those messages come in from, you know, personal contacts. I know I don't need to respond to them because all of my friends and family know that unless it's an emergency, they will not be responded to until I have my 2 hour break with my cell phone.
There you go. Kathleen, thank you for the conversation this afternoon. I appreciate this. Thank you.
Of course, Ted, my absolute pleasure. And I hope everyone has a safe drive.
Yeah, I hope everyone has a safe drive this afternoon as well. Thanks, Kathleen. That's Kathleen Gursky, vice chair of the Alberta Camping Association. Their website, by the way, great resource if you're looking for a summer camp, albertacamping.com. AlbertaCamping, one word, .com. Just go on there. You can create a profile, log in, and there's all kinds of different camps depending on what your child or grandchild wants to do for this summer to get them away from those screens, right? It's time for Motoring Monday on The Drive. It's our chance to focus in on topics affecting you and your vehicle. Brian Turner joining us from driving.ca. Brian, thank you for being here. How are you?
Just fine, just fine.
That's good. Okay, you wanted to talk about keeping our vehicles from being stolen, Brian. Why is this on your radar right now?
Well, vehicle thefts are on the rise across the country. No surprise. If you can't get the new ones, if you have to wait months to order one, well, there's got to be ways to beat the supply chain problems. And the ones that, of course, are gaining the most attention by thieves are the highest end. So think of the SUVs, the luxury brands. Think of the super trucks like the Ram TRX, the Ford Raptor. Think of things like the Broncos and the Wranglers. And the old rule of thumb used to be thieves could get at these vehicles as long as they could be within a radio range of your key fob inside your house. They'd amplify it with some really simple, easy-to-find equipment and then trick the vehicle into thinking the key was at the door. In you go, push the button, and you're off.
Wow.
Now they got a little bit more advanced. The store I work as a full-time day job, yes, I still have one, we lost three TRX trucks. These are the Ram trucks.
Really?
They're worth north of $100,000. And we watched the whole affair on our video feeds. They came in with laptops and smartphones, and they took about 20 to 25 minutes to get in each vehicle. And then the lights came on, and the exhaust, you know, blared, and away they went.
How can they keep driving, Brian, once they get out of the fob's range, you know?
Well, it basically, they've replaced the fob with their smartphone.
Okay.
You know, years ago, I did an interview with one of the guys in charge of the autonomous vehicles lab at QNX. That's the BlackBerry division in Ottawa. And he was amazed when he started digging into the late model cars they gave him in his fleet to turn into autonomous robot cars. He said, Brian, there's dozens of computers in these things, and they all have one thing in common. They wouldn't recognize a hack if it hit them over the head with a hammer.
Oh, wow.
And they're still making them that way today. The thieves will get in through a back door, which would be usually the infotainment system.
Okay.
And then they'll be able to convince the other computers that they belong there. And yeah, it's okay to unlock the doors. Yeah, it's okay to start the engine.
Okay.
And they're off. Really, if you've got these vehicles or anything in that you know, really popular to be stolen type, first thing, if you don't keep your key fob in the house in what's called a Faraday cage, which is a metal-lined device that keeps the radio waves from escaping, you might as well just leave the keys in the car and turn the lights on and invite people in.
Wow.
Those can be made at home, but you know there are some limitations to what you can do with a tin can and some aluminum foil. However, you can buy real Faraday pouches at most electronic stores.
Okay, and that's all it takes to kind of keep those signals locked in.
Indeed. And if you ever have the option to sign up for vehicle locator functions on your vehicle, a lot of vehicles in that category have it. It's usually a pay-as-you-go type of an option. Do it, and then you can get notifications if the vehicle leaves your home, and you can report the theft while it's in motion in your neighborhood. Gives the local authorities a better chance to bring it back.
Yeah, all right. Good advice, Brian. Thank you for this. Thank you.
You're welcome. Safe driving, everyone.
All right, thanks, Brian. Have a good evening. That's Brian Turner from driving.ca, talking about topics affecting you and your vehicle. Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to the Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear the Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.